Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ready from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava, text number 52. Nati sneha prasango va kartavya kvapi kena chit kurvan vindeta santapam kapota eva dina dihi. Na,
na.
Not.
Na.
Ati sneha.
Excess affection.
Prasangaha.
Close association.
Va.
Or.
Karatavyaha.
One should manifest.
Kva api.
Ever.
Kena chit.
With anyone,
or anything,
kurvan,
so doing,
vindeta,
one will experience,
santapam,
great distress,
kapotaha,
the pigeon,
eva,
just as,
dinadhi,
cripple-minded.
One
should never indulge in excessive affection or concern for anyone or anything. Otherwise, one will have to experience great suffering, just like the foolish pigeon. Purport. The Sanskrit prefix ati, or excessive, indicates affection or attachment in which there is no Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 29, Suridam Savabhutanam. The Lord is the eternal well-wisher of every living being. The Lord is so affectionate that he sits in the heart of every conditioned soul and accompanies him throughout his endless wandering in the kingdom of Maya, patiently waiting for the conditioned soul to come back home, back to Godhead. Thus, the Lord makes all arrangements for the eternal happiness of every living entity. The best way for anyone to show compassion and affection for all living beings is to become a preacher on behalf of Lord Krishna and assist the Lord in reclaiming the fallen souls. If our affection or attachment for others is based on bodily sense gratification in the name of society, friendship and love, that excessive, unwanted affection Atishneha will cause burning pain at the time of the breaking or destruction of the relationship. Now the story of the foolish pigeon will be narrated. A similar story is described in the 7th canto, 2nd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, told by Yamaraj to the mourning widows of King Suyogya. I'll read the next verse. There's no purport, sorry. Kapota kaschanaranye kritanido vanaspato kapotya bharyaya sardham uvasa katichit samaha. There once was a pigeon who lived in the forest along with his wife. He had built a nest within a tree and lived there for several years in her company. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha.
Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakada Mahayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vajjalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam.
Ati sneha, too much attachment, too much affection. Not that affection isn't wanted, mind you. But in the first sentence, Vidyananda Maharaj mentions here, ati, or excessive, indicates affection or attachment in which there is no Krishna consciousness. So, he then goes on to describe how Krishna demonstrates his affection for everybody. Suridam sarvabhutanam. Just to contrast, or just to compare real affection for excessive affection or unwanted affection. You know, in we become attached to things in a material conception of existence, and really as a result of that affection or attachment for material things, all we're going to experience is some form of distress. Adyantavanta kuntaya nateshu ramate buddha. The wise understand the nature of material existence, just like we were discussing the other day, that the nature of material existence is like the waxing and waning of the moon. It appears, disappears, and then appears again in a continuous cycle. Brahmanda bhumite kona bhagyavana jeev. The living entity is revolving, moving around in material existence. Sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a dog, sometimes as a germ, rotating around and around and around. So material existence is a sequence of this, of these changes. So the wise are encouraged not to become attached to the temporal things of this limited material existence. Because the stronger the affection and the attachment, the greater the distress that will be caused in due course of time when that relationship will be broken. The relationships must be broken. As will be evidenced here by the story of the pigeons, the kapota. You know, a pigeon is a good example because the pigeons become very attached to each other. You know, you've heard of lovebirds? Heard of lovebirds? Well, the pigeons are a good example. You know, the male and female pigeon become very attached to each other. And you can see them necking and, you know, pecking and doing all the things that pigeons do. And this story is an example of how the birds become very attached to each other without realizing the temporary nature of their relationship. And to illustrate this point, there are a number of stories in the Bhagavad Gita that actually illustrate this point of affection and then distress. One of my favourite stories is the story of Maharaj Chitraketu and how he wanted to have a son. And he ended up having hundreds, if not thousands, of wives in an attempt to have a son. It wasn't successful. And then one day Narada Muni and Angira, was it Angira Muni, came to his kingdom and he sought a benediction from them. You know, it's the nature of saintly persons to give benedictions to others in an effort to help them make advancement in their spiritual life. That's the real purpose. The real purpose of the sadhus or the saintly persons, just as mentioned here. If you want to really show affection for somebody, then you reawaken them to their original position, to their spiritual position. But it's interesting. Narada Muni and Angira Muni met Maharaj Chitraketu and they wanted to preach to him. But all Maharaj Chitraketu was interested in was having a son. I have to have a son. Oh, please help me have a son. So they gave him the benediction that he would have a son. Because they also gave him a warning that, you know, this son will be the cause of great happiness, but also the cause of great distress. And of course, Maharaj Chitraketu said, no, it's okay, just have a son. I don't mind the distress. You know, he might be a bit naughty or whatever. But I can tolerate the naughtiness. I just have to have a son. So, you know, the boy was called Harshashoka, which means happiness and distress. That was his name. And I think, you know, they gave him some, there was some jagya or something performed, and they gave him some sweet rice to give his wife, and then she was to then conceive a child. So, you know, there was great joy and celebration when the son was when the child was conceived, and then when he was born, and Maharaj Chitraketu was so happy that now he had a son. Because he then showered his affection upon the boy and his mother, but the other co-wives were upset because they were being neglected, and so they then decided to poison the child, and then the child was murdered, basically. And then Maharaj Chitraketu was beside himself with grief, you know, falling on the ground, crying and moaning and wailing and suffering like anything. Because then also Narada Muni and Angira Muni appeared at that point in time and then inquired from the king, what's wrong? What's the matter? And the king revealed his distress. Then they brought the boy back to life. So the king was then happy again. Oh, my son, my son. But then the boy started to preach to his father. And his father, and he said, you know, words to the effect, well, who are you? He said, I'm your father. Don't you recognize me? I'm your father. He said, there's so many fathers. Which father are you? So, actually, this was an arrangement. Narada Muni and Angira Rishi, they wanted to actually help Maharaj Chitraketu make spiritual advancement. That was their whole focus. But when they came to his palace, they realized this fellow is in total mire. We can't preach to him. He's only interested in, you know, having a son. But they arranged it in such a way so that, so even though they gave him a benediction, the benediction was such that in due course of time, Maharaj Chitraketu would actually become realized and would understand his spiritual identity and the identity of his son also, for that matter. And so Narada Muni and Angira Rishi really were thinking very deeply and were concerned for the well-being of Maharaj Chitraketu in the long term, in the long term context of the of his spiritual advancement, spiritual progress in life. And there's a story that's referred to in this purport also, that's told by Hiranyakashipu of all people. Actually, the story is told by Yamaraj. Who appears in the form of a boy, a young boy. In relationship to the killing of Hiranyaksha, because in the aftermath of Hiranyaksha's death, then his family members were lamenting. They're upset. And Hiranyakashipu was also upset. Hiranyakashipu was upset because he said, you know, Lord Vishnu says that he's equal to everybody. Samoham Savabhuteshu. He's equal to everybody. But just see, he's taken the side of the demigods and he's killed my brother Hiranyaksha. So how is he impartial? This infuriated Hiranyakashipu. But his family members were all lamenting, and especially the wives of Hiranyaksha. So in order to pacify them, Hiranyakashipu told them a story. Actually, he was giving them transcendental knowledge. He was making a point. He said, basically, we're all, even though we belong to the same family, we're all like travellers that come to an inn. Right? We're all like travellers that come to an inn, and we happen to be sitting around the same table in the evening, having in the same room, enjoying our meal. So, you know, when people travel, they stay in a motel, then they go into the restaurant, and they all stay there for the night, have a good time eating and drinking. Then they go to bed. Then in the morning they get up, pack up their cars, hop in their cars, and then all drive off to different destinations. So even though we all come together as a family and we enjoy each other's company, we're just like the travellers that come and stay in an inn and enjoy the hospitality and the atmosphere and the food. But then in the morning we all leave the hotel and we go off in our different directions. So, you know, the point being, well, we shouldn't become too attached to our, you know, family situation, because it is only temporary. Which is this point of ati-sneha, you know, over becoming too attached, excessively attached, especially excessively attached without Krishna consciousness, which is a point that we can get onto a bit later on. So anyway, he then told a story about King Sujagya. No, actually, he told a story about Yamaraj telling the story of Sujagya. Then Sujagya was a great hero who was killed in battle, and his co-wives, his wives were on the battlefield mourning the death of their husband. You know, he died a hero. It mentions in the Bhagavatam how he had shown his tenacity, his prowess, by biting his lip. And he died, you know, biting his lip. Which is, you know, despite his determination, he was still dead. He was a determined man, but he died, as all determined men do. Of course, he died a hero's death, but still he was dead. So, Yamaraj appeared in the form of a young boy and preached to the wives of Sujagya. And he made some interesting comments. He said, you know, despite the fact that a man loses his money, he may lose his money. So you're walking down the street and you drop your purse in the middle of the street, right? And then later on you realize that you've lost your money, and you come back to that place to find your money, and you find your wallet. It's just sitting there. You know, it's in the middle of a crowded street. People are walking around and nobody sees it. And you come back and you just, wow, look at that, I've got my wallet. You open up to see, whoop, has anybody taken anything? And all of your money's intact. Right? So despite the fact you lose your wallet, it's sitting in the middle of the street, anybody could pick it up and take it, nobody sees it. Or, he mentions another example, despite the fact that a man has the best doctors and the best treatment, he gets ill and he dies. That's it. Despite that, you know, he can be fabulously wealthy, $5 billion worth of wealth, have the best doctors and the best hospital, and yet still he has to die. This is basically, you know, the laws of karma. You So we can't, basically his point is we can't lament, just like Krishna mentions to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. What is it? 2:14, is it? That's 13. No, it must be later. No, before that, actually, 11. 2:11. What's 2:11? Asochanamba sochanstwa. Pragyamva dams chabasha se. Is it? Gatasun agatasums cha nanu sochanti panditaha. Yeah. A wise man doesn't lament. Naso chanti means he doesn't, in the end, he doesn't lament for the living or for the dead. Because we understand that each one of us is enjoying and suffering as a result of our past activities. That's a little hard to swallow sometimes, especially when we're suffering. When we're enjoying, it's okay. Yes, I'm enjoying because of my piety. Right? But when we're suffering, we don't like to think, I'm suffering because I'm a rascal. We think, I'm suffering because everybody's picking on me. I'm innocent. Huh? I didn't do anything. So Krishna mentions, the wise person, na so chanti panditaha, the wise person doesn't lament. You're speaking learned words, but you're lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Because one has to have an understanding. Of course, we can't be too callous, right? You're just getting your karma. Suffer. Just like also, ati sneha, we shouldn't, it says excessive affection, but excessive affection is interesting in that first line of the purport. Excessive affection without Krishna consciousness. So certainly, a devotee is sympathetic and supportive of one who's suffering, and is prepared to be a friend of, and is a friend of everybody, understanding their eternal relationship. As I just mentioned, Suridam Sabhabhutanam. Krishna resides with all of the living entities eternally, in the material world at least, as a super soul. He shows his affection by waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for the jivatma to turn to him and take his shelter and take his instruction. So the devotees show affection. We do. It's not that we're not affectionate, but the affection is based on understanding our spiritual connection rather than just the material connection. So, it's not that we shouldn't be affectionate to our family and to our children and to our friends, obviously. Okay, we understand that our relationships are temporary on the material platform, certainly. But that doesn't mean then we should just deal with each other cold-heartedly. That then becomes a misunderstanding of this ati sneha can lead to an impersonal concept, an impersonal conception. But whereas Krishna demonstrates the degree of affection that is demonstrated by the devotees by staying with every one of the living entities, even though they've ignored him and rejected him, left their original position foolishly, still Krishna stays with them to help them at any point in time, an exemplary display of affection, actually. So, in the relationships between the devotees, there's that display of affection based on an understanding of spiritual principles, not on some material affection or attachment or attraction. And you know, the pigeon is described here, dinadhi, right? Which means, dinadhi means like the translation is cripple-minded, less intelligent. Dinadhi means not having any intelligence, basically. And Yamaraj, in the form of the boy, told the wives of Sujagya, they said that he said that one should learn from the experience of the pigeon. Our family life shouldn't be fixed in this very small conception of existence, or this cripple-minded conception of our relationships, just on the bodily platform. Like he was saying, you know, we are just like travellers who have come to the hotel. We're enjoying ourselves now, but in the morning we'll all go in our different directions. So he gave the example of the pigeon, who, this is another story, different pigeon, who was very happily married, living in the forest with his wife, but who was stalked by a hunter. And the hunter appeared as death personified. He cast his net and he trapped the wife, the pigeon's wife. And as a result of his wife being ensnared in the trap of the hunter, the pigeon became totally bewildered and distressed. Oh, how unfortunate. How cruel is providence? That's what he was saying. How cruel is providence? How cruel is fate? That my wife has been trapped by the hunter. What good is there in that? Bad for him, good for the hunter. He was thinking of pigeon pie. There's a nature of material existence. You know, one person's suffering is another person's enjoyment. You know, I mentioned this story before. The Diwali is a source of enjoyment for everybody, but then everybody eats too many sweets, and you know, they get holes in their teeth, and so then they suffer. But their suffering is the dentist is thinking, great, very good. So the pigeon was deeply lamenting the loss of his wife, and in his lamentation he lost his all sense of his situation. And as a result, the hunter shot him with an arrow, bow and arrow, got him, and killed him. So then they were both dead. So Yamaraj, in the form of the young boy, said to the wives of Sujagya, we shouldn't be like the pigeon, because they're lamenting about the death of their husband, and they're thinking, who will protect us? Who will look after us now? We're all alone. And that's what the pigeon was thinking. The pigeon was thinking, who will protect my wife now? Who will protect our children? Of course, in his lamentation and in his ignorance, and he also was killed. So Yamaraj said to the wives of Sujagya, we shouldn't be like the pigeon, lamenting our situation, not realizing that death is stalking us as well. We think that we're going to hold on to these relationships forever. And then when the relationship is broken, then we lament. But we don't realize that we're next. The material energy is going to, the material energy has destroyed the relationship, our relationship with, but then we'll also be destroyed in due course of time. Nanu sanchi na panditaha, the wise doesn't lament. This is why the wise don't lament. Because they understand that, you know, I'm next. So therefore, ati shneha, or too much affection for the limited, temporary features of material existence is not recommended. Because the nature of the relationships are temporary. If we really want to, and so it's mentioned here, if we want to show affection for others, then that affection should be based not on the material relationships, which are limited and temporary, but on an understanding of the spiritual identity of everyone. So therefore, Ridhadana Maharaj mentions here, just as Krishna sits within the heart of everybody, Suridam Sabhabhutanam, as their well-wisher and friend, waiting for them to turn to him so that he can instruct them and guide them on the path of going back home, back to Godhead, which is the most, you know, that's the most important thing. All of the austerities and penances. And, you know, there will be suffering. The devotees actually take on voluntarily the tapasya of spiritual life, realizing that you can't avoid the tapasya, actually. We may work to try to avoid suffering, but in the material realm, suffering is inevitable. It's just part of, you know, it's part of the cycle of existence. Right? 1 minute you're in the premiership team winning the grand final, and then the next year you're, you know, getting the wooden spoon. That's just the way it goes. That's the way life is. So the devotees, recognizing the comings and goings, matras, parshas, tukunteya, they tolerate these things. And acknowledging the spiritual identity of the living entity, they show their affection, compassion, love, actually, by as Vidyananda Maharaj says, by becoming a preacher on behalf of Lord Krishna. So they go out of their ways to assist others, just like Narada Muni and Angira Muni. They came to Maharaj Chitraketu with the goal of preaching to him, because they realized at that point there's no point in preaching to this fellow. He's only interested in having a son. But they encouraged him in such a way, they facilitated his material situation in such a way that ultimately he would get a spiritual benefit. You know, sometimes we do that. We encourage people, come and take prasadam, everybody can have a free, $5.50, all you can eat. Right? As an example. Because we're not just there to fill their bellies. But we know that by taking prasadam, one becomes purified. They'll be relieved of their hunger, yes, certainly. But at the same time, they'll get purified. Bunjate te tvagam pa pam ye pachantyat makaranat, as mentioned in the Jagyashishta. Those who take the remnants of sacrifice, the prasad, they get purified. So Narada Muni and Angira Rishi, they, and we see it also in the case of Manigriva and Nalakuvera, say for example, you know, they got cursed by Narada Muni to stand as trees. So you think, this is a terrible thing for them to get this curse and have to stand as a tree for 1,000 years. But actually it was for their ultimate spiritual benefit. So the devotees are interacting and engaging and showing their affection for others by thinking of the long-term spiritual benefit of that person. And so therefore, they encourage everybody. Ultimately, we're encouraging everybody to somehow or another make some progress in your spiritual life. Even that progress may not be seen immediately. May not be seen immediately, but the devotee, just like Krishna's prepared to stay with the living entity for as long as it takes, so that when he does turn towards him, then he's there to instruct, to guide, to inspire him, to take up again his spiritual position. That's a real showing of affection. In the case of Narada Muni, and you know, it appeared to be a punishment. But you know, that punishment sometimes is like the affection that a parent might show a child. You know, the children want to just play, for example. They just want to play. But then when you get to 5, it's time to go to school. But the children don't like to go to school. But the parent has to be firm, understand, this is for the ultimate benefit. But that's a real show of affection, not that, we don't want to upset the child, let it just play all the time. Let him just do what he likes. You know, go and play in the cupboard under the sink. Drink the Dettol. Drink the drain cleaner. Now, if the child wants to play under the cupboard, in the cupboard under the sink, the parent will smack him. Get out of here. For the benefit of the child. So the devotees are thinking of the benefit. the spiritual benefit of others. That's a real demonstration of affection. Rather than becoming absorbed or enamored by the relationships on the material platform, rather the relationships are developed on the spiritual platform. And so the dealings between the devotees are actually affectionate. Respectful, but also affection, showing affection for others by working together cooperatively, serving Krishna cooperatively, preaching. Then this is a real show of, this is actual affection. And of course, and those relationships endure. So, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, we'll have ISKCON in the spiritual world. Would you imagine? Or could you imagine? And that's a source of great satisfaction, that those relationships are a source of inspiration and satisfaction. Whereas, you know, if our affection or attachment is for others is based on sense gratification, as is mentioned here, in the name of society, friendship and love, then we'll be disappointed. We'll be disappointed. So unless that affection and love is on based on Krishna conscious principles, which we have. What is it? Tadati praktigrinati guyam makyati pichati mungte bho jayate jaiva sad vidhim priti lakshanam. So there are ways of showing affection amongst the devotees. Based on a spiritual foundation, spiritual understanding of our existence, and that our existence is complete or perfect when it's engagement in service to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. And of course our service to Krishna very much is preaching, as Prabhupada instructed us, as he demonstrated. That's our show of affection for each other and for others. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Rosa.
I think he's around Kashyapu.
Sorry?
Yeah,
Hiranyakashipu.
But if you didn't tell it in a Krishna conscious perspective,
it was relatively Krishna conscious. Hiranyakashipu recognizes that, in one sense, he recognized, or certainly in that narrative, that, you know, Lord Vishnu is the supreme. He's just upset that he took the side of the demigods. Were not just upset. Yeah, no, it's interesting because, you know, he demonstrated a fair degree of understanding of spiritual principles in telling that story, but he just is a demon. Yeah. Yes, Rajanai. What was that first bit? Sorry, I missed it. Question about, yeah.
So you heard that Srila Prabhupada was saying that what, like, scientists or so on, they call it instincts, we call it super soul. For example, a bird knows how to fly, or like a pigeon knows how to do Africa or whatever by instinct. And, you know, we say that this is the information given by super soul. So actions the super soul is giving to us, how they're different, and what kind of levels do we actually get instructions in our body from the super soul on?
You'd like to fly to Africa? You'll have to take birth as a pigeon to find out. That's a good question. It's quite obvious that, and Prabhupada gives this example. He says, you know, that in a human form of life, we get a greater degree of autonomy and independence than the animals. The burden of responsibility is greater for the humans, and the expectation is higher, right? And the opportunity is greater. For the animals, they're basically restricted by the modes of material nature to act in fairly limited ways, because they're not able, you know, the living entity gets constrained because of their inability to follow Krishna's order. So therefore, they're locked in, pretty much. In amazing ways, some of these instinctual behaviours. You know, there's a tern, which is like a seagull, that travels from the Arctic to Antarctica, and some of these birds fly non-stop from the Arctic to the Antarctic. Non-stop. Takes them about 196 hours. But they fly non-stop. They don't stop. There are other birds who... they fly from the Gulf... no, was it? They fly from... these, like honey eaters, they fly across the Gulf of Mexico. They're just amazing. I was reading the book. There's a book called Nature's IQ, and just amazing how these animals. They fly across the water. In some cases, birds who have never ever flown that route before, yet they know. They fly to some of the birds. They fly to Hawaii, which is right out in the middle of the ocean, right? And some of these birds, they can't swim, right? So they've got to get to the destination, otherwise that's it, finished. And according to normal calculations, some of them, there's some birds who, according to their body weight and their wing capacity and everything, it's actually not possible for them to fly the distance by themselves. They have to fly with other birds, and they fly in a V formation, so that, you know, the thrust of the bird in front actually gives the birds behind a lift. Right? So the bird in front's expending a lot more energy than those that are coming behind. And so they take it in turns to see who goes in front. Huh? And that's how the whole lot of the birds can actually get from one location to another, because by themselves they can't actually make the distance, because they just don't have bodies that can carry that much energy. Interesting. And so, you know, some of these points are certainly almost impossible to explain how evolution could actually create these things, because, you know, if the birds just decided to start flying by them, you know, if one bird suddenly decided to fly one day to, you know, Hawaii, He wouldn't get there by himself because he doesn't have the energy to get there. They can only get there if all of the birds fly. Now, assuming that, you know, and this is the point, you know, assuming that in evolution is just a random mutation that produces just something, you know, spontaneously, then how does that create, you know, flocks of birds flying year in, year out to their destination when one of them by themselves, you know, if just one bird decided, okay, you know, it's by some quirk of evolution, of genetic mutation, oh, I'm going to fly to Hawaii tomorrow. He did it by himself, then he's finished. So that, you know, that particular feature is not of benefit to the species. So it's very difficult, you know, looking at the behaviour of animals, very difficult to see how evolution could actually create these behaviours so that it would be beneficial, because, you know, that one feature by itself is just useless for the species. So anyway. The animals are given a more restrictive environment by the laws of nature. Ultimately, we understand by the arrangement of Krishna through the administration of the different demigods and so forth, the universe is created and structured and ordered in a particular way. According to Krishna's plan, you know, Lord Brahma is the engineer, but he works according to the plan of Krishna. So all of these things are provided, all these facilities are provided ultimately by the the indwelling super soul. Krishna mentions mata jnanam. That's one verse, but it's not the verse. 15:15. Savasya chaham. Savasya chaham. Ridisani vishto. Matasmiti jnanam apavanam cha. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So, you know, Krishna gives the humans a lot more freedom and a lot more independence. But ultimately, what does he want? He wants us to make the decision to come back to him. But he gives us a lot more freedom and facility within which to make that decision, so that it is voluntarily given. That decision is voluntarily made by us, right? Whereas for the animal species, they don't have that capacity, so therefore they're restricted far more greatly by the laws of the material nature.
You know. This verse, it's actually quite a dangerous verse to read by the devotee.
A dangerous verse. Yes, if it's misunderstood, definitely.
As we advance in our Krishna consciousness and become more acknowledged of what's going on, the devotee does indulge in excessive affection and concern for everybody who thinks, as exemplified by the previous acharyas.
Yeah, that's not really considered to be excessive, though. That's considered to be appropriate.
But it's still excessive.
Sacrificing his life.
Yeah.
The reason why it's not considered excessive is because it's based on a proper understanding of the spiritual relationship.
The knowledge, basically, is that.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And we can understand from that excessive relationship that we also attain that by its understanding and protection of life as well.
And yes, just to build on that, you know, the reason why the devotees have so much affection love and affection for Prabhupada is because of the sacrifices that he made to give us the opportunities that we have now to become Krishna conscious. You know, Prabhupada almost died on the Jaladuta coming to America. So he sacrificed his... In fact, you know, he said, according to my astrology, that's the time I should have died. But Krishna has given me this extra time so that I can preach. So, you know, most people... Sorry? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. At an age when most people are, you know, looking for retirement and going fishing and, you know, playing chess and all that sort of thing. And Prabhupada was, you know, Prabhupada would just say, you know, this is ignorance, total ignorance. And instead of retiring and just taking it easy, he embarked on a mission to, you know, as you say, try to liberate everybody. Just amazing. So that is a real display of affection. Even Prabhupada said, you know, Krishna's got, Lord Vishnu's got 10 arms. So, you know, what can you hold on to with your 2 arms? He'll take it all away. So he said, I was hanging on to everything and Krishna took it all away. But now that I've, you know, given everything to Krishna, now he's giving everything back. With 10 arms, he'll give you more than you can hold with your 2. Yes. Yep. Yep. Somebody else had a hand up over here? No. Okay, Gwantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.